welcome everybody to another installment of the Vinyl Community Podcasts. I'm your host, Rob, from the YouTube channel Northern Revolutions. I am happily joined again today by a repeat guest, my good friend Joe from the Vinyl Community YouTube channel Racer Records. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Yeah, we've been doing a bit of things lately, but that's all right. That's a good
thing. We have. Collaboration is what makes it fun, right?
Exactly. That's right.
So Joe and I were talking about many things, and the subject of used records came up, and we thought, well, there's an interesting discussion to be had there. So tonight, Joe and I are going to shoot the breeze about collecting used records and what that looks like these days and how that has changed over the last, you know, decade of the vinyl resurgence and sort of, you know, our observations on that part of the hobby, which is obviously a very large part of the hobby. So
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we all tend to focus on different things and, you know, there's a ton of new vinyl out there, right? Which is an absolutely wonderful thing. But there's also 60 or 70 years worth of vinyl that's already out there. So it's a big part of the hobby. So we're kind of going to dive into that. Sort of point of reference for those that may not be familiar with you, Joe, or maybe have not seen your channel before. Can you sort of paint a little picture for folks about, you know, what's the history of Racer Joe's vinyl collecting experience and, you know, how long have you been doing it? And, you know, kind of let us paint a picture so people kind of understand what that is for you.
Sure. So obviously I'm of the age where vinyl was the thing when I was in my formative years, my teenage years. I'm 58, so do the math. You know, it was the 70s and the 80s, and there was vinyl aplenty to be had. Not really a used market per se at that point. There were definitely used stores, and because people would trade and buy and sell and things like that, but not like it is currently. So really at that point for myself, it was all new. So I've got, you know, I had my three or four or whatever hundred. They got put away when CDs came out, like a lot of people. So I went and I bought Dire Straits and I bought the $1,000 CD player and I listened to it over and over and over again. And the poor record sat in the closet like they were some redheaded stepchild. And then I think about 8 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, a buddy of mine, I would see him. He was talking about his records and talking about his records. And one day I just finally said, screw it. I know where they are. I'm going to rip the storage room apart and get these things out. And I had this old piece of crap turntable. The way that the guy at the local stereo shop described it, I would have been better off if I would have taken a baseball bat and put a nail on the end of it and played my record with that. So it was like Crosley, like just lower than that even.
Wow.
But anyway, so I pulled those 200 or 300 out, and now 8 or 9 years later, there's 3,300 sitting in behind me.
Wow.
And a lot of them have come. A lot of them have come from collections. There's some new stuff. I certainly still buy a lot of new stuff, but really, I would say that probably 90% of my stuff is used, where I think you're kind of the opposite. I think I'm not sure of that, but
well, I mean, my entry point is different than you. So you're 58, or is that what you said? 58.
That's right.
I'm 46, which makes me cringe to think how the hell did I get to 46, but nonetheless, My formative years, and I've talked about it on my channel before, I really got into music in the early 90s when I was, you know, 13, 14, 15, you know, probably 14, 15, I guess. So, you know, like 92, 3, 4, something like that. Without me actually doing the math. Which was, you know, when vinyl was at its lowest point. And I had an interesting, I guess, entry point into record collecting because my dad, may he rest in peace, was a music fanatic. And I grew up in a household that had a record collection that rivals what you and I have now. My dad had, you know, 1,000 albums or whatever. The stereo system was in the living room and the records were always being played. So like it was a thing that was just sort of omnipresent in my childhood. And I didn't give two craps about music until I was about, you know, 13 or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah. When I decided to get into music, I got into music, and that was at the time that Dad had bought, you know, a relatively expensive CD player and was starting to buy everything on CD because, oh my God, this album from, you know, whenever in 1973 is finally available on CD for the first time.
Yeah. So yeah.
Dad dove in that way. And it's strange that as he kind of went down the CD path, I thought vinyl's fantastic. And so I was always, now I have, I don't know, 400 CDs or whatever, because back in the 90s, sure, there's a lot of stuff that was only available on CD.
If we'd only bought the albums that we should have in the 90s. But anyway, go ahead.
Precisely. Yeah. So yeah. I always sort of gravitated to vinyl because I enjoyed the tactile experience of it. So vinyl was always my preferred thing. So I did buy some of that 90s vinyl that a lot of people wish they had bought. Not nearly enough of it, but so vinyl was kind of always a thing for me. I would say my collection is, and I don't have 3,300 albums like you. I've got about 800 and change. So, I mean, I've been collecting for 30 years and I only have 800 albums. So I'm very selective. You know, if I know I'm not going to listen to it, you know, with some frequency, it doesn't go into, I don't buy it because, you know, I'm fairly discerning about that just because space, money, you know, all those other things.
Yeah.
So I'm about half and half because, you know, in the 90s and that my first entry point to music was the Beatles. So I have all those original first pressings, Canadian and UK. And a lot of that stuff, you know, I wanted the originals. And now there's so much good stuff coming out that's new. I tend to gravitate to the new these days, even though I'm rethinking news because new's getting stupidly expensive, especially here in Canada, more so than it is in the States. Because we don't have the Walmarts and we have Walmart, but they don't do vinyl like they do in the States and Target. So new is crazy expensive here. So I went from used to new, and I think I'm kind of going back to use nowadays. So
yeah, you know, I mean, and I've got like, it's a big number. I wouldn't call you know, a lot of it's not filler. That's not fair. Everything I own, I enjoy, because I've given away and given to Value Village and the Salvation Army at probably 3,300 in the collections. I got one large one of about 1,500, so that really kind of got me going. I had my original stuff. And then I came across this one collection, and that kind of started it. And then, you know, there's been a few here and there. And so, like I said, what I've got, everything I would listen to, everything that I have. Do I often? No. And at this point, it's almost ridiculous because I don't know what the hell to listen to ever. That's why the Fast Five thing, it's like somebody picked me something to listen to so I don't have to choose.
Right.
Or I take my phone and Discogs and I shake it and it picks the album to listen to, which is fun too.
Sure.
But yeah, I got about a year in, I was picking up a few here and there, you know, there was 10 for sale or there was 20 for sale, but this 1500 came up and I paid I paid a couple of grand for it. So not a buck a piece, but a buck and change a piece.
Right.
It was a gentleman that passed away. It was his sister that kind of brought me in, you know, with his kids and things like that. And they weren't interested, or they pulled out what they had wanted already. So, and they wanted it to go to someone, who is going to appreciate it. And I always do. When I'm given records, and that's happened a few times too, there's been a couple of friends that have given me things. There's been some former clients that have given me some albums. And those ones I keep regardless of what they are. Even if it's Nana Muscuri, that's still, there's a box of that. And it's not much, because actually the people that gave me stuff were pretty cool. And I ended up with some pretty good stuff. But so that kind of got it started. And then, like I say, there's been, you know, a couple collections of 200 or 300 along the way, but you get a collection of 300 and sometimes 100 you need and the other 200 you don't anymore. So I started doing the pop-up sales. I started putting them on probably 6-7 years ago. And then I got out of it a little bit. I got back into it again a couple of years ago. But it's just a great way. And there's a pretty decent community of people here that do it. There's like five or six core guys that, you know, if you need to have a pop-up record sale, you go, okay, we're going to do it next Sunday. And they're there because they've got the boxes already sorted and already ready to go, and they're set. So, and, you know, but even recently, and I shared this with you before we started, I thought you knew already, but I'm trying to start up. I say I'm starting up a store. I'm not necessarily, well, I am starting up a store, but it's within a store. I retired a couple years ago. I used to be an audiovisual installer, big screen TVs, sound systems, all of that. I got out. My body was starting to fall apart, and I didn't want to be a sales guy. Nothing against sales guys.
I am a sales guy, and I hate it. So.
Yeah, but I didn't want to be one. And I couldn't physically do the stuff that I was doing anymore, or I could, but I didn't want to, and I could afford to get out of it. So I did. Anyway, they dragged me back about a year ago. I was just going back and answering phones. And one day, I kind of off the cuff, I knew there was a big collection out there. And so I said to my boss, hey, we should go halves on this and start a store. And he goes, okay. And so I kind of, oh, really? Okay. You want me to repeat that? And do you want to say okay again? And he goes, yeah, because at the store, we do a lot with, again, audio visual installation, big screens, stuff like that. But we still sell Bowers and Wilkins speakers, and we still sell turntables, and we still sell amplifiers. So we want to draw some people in. So it's not going to be a standalone store, but it's going to be within the store. And
yeah, but it's there's some synergy there, so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure, definitely, because you know the people are coming in to look at the gear, and they're going to be the ones, the two channel guys are going and girls are going to be the ones that'll buy the albums, and vice versa, those coming in for the albums are the ones that maybe will upgrade their speakers or upgrade their amps or upgrade their turntables. So in the last 3 to 4 weeks, I've bought about 3,500 records. We bought one collection of 25 and a couple 500ers. So, and I'm still looking, because out of those, I've kind of processed them all almost. And there's lots of good stuff in there. There's lots of obscure stuff that probably, you know, it'll be tough to find the right person. There'll be person. There's lots of, country and jazz and things like that. But, DJ promotional copies and stuff, a lot of this came from a radio station. But we have to keep looking, because if I open up tomorrow and in theory all the good stuff, for lack of the proper term, sells, then it's still the other stuff, which there will be people looking for, but not on a regular basis. Right. And I don't want people to come and go, well, they don't have anything. Right.
Well, and so, that's the thing, you know, you always, your inventory has to be revolving, because
it does. Yeah.
You know, you get the people that will come in on a regular basis. And if they've come in two or three times and you've got the same stuff, they're probably not going to come in a fourth time.
Yeah. What's nice though is, and Mike does a very good job of it. There's a couple of channels, but Mike from the InGroove in Phoenix does a really good job of making sure that he puts it out there, that he got new things in. You know, he does his weekly new inventory. We're going to do a little bit of new, but more so, we're not going to go crazy. Like, I'm not going to stock hundreds of new vinyl, but we're going to have some, because if we get a clientele, we want them to, sure, you know, they're going to pick up the new Green Day, or they're going to pick up the new Beyonce, or they're going to pick up the new Taylor Swift. You just have to have Taylor Swift. I think if you own a store of any sort, you just have to have Taylor Swift vinyl to sell. But
you're speaking to a Swiftie, so I, absolutely, of course.
Well, that's good. Yeah, exactly. I'm looking forward to it. So it.
Well, that's
she sells records, man. That's
exciting about opening a record store. I think that's something many of us in the vinyl community go, man, if I could have my own record store, I mean, I'd love to do that. But
yeah, and it's been it's been nice, because I mean, again, and the lights are already on and the heat's already paid for, sure, and everything else. So, you know, it's not like we have to struggle to sell a whole bunch. We do want to, but it's also to bring people in, and it's, you know, not a lost leader for the store, but a little bit of that. Right. So, but in that process, and I think where we kind of started to talk a little bit about this conversation was that some people think that their records are just worth gold, because they look online, whether it's locally on like a Facebook or a Virage sale, and they see that somebody's selling Elvis Presley in Hawaii. That's a bad example because that's a good one. Anyway, for $60 or $80, and they think, oh man, all my records are worth $80.
Right. You know, the thing is, you know, and you hear it all the time, someone will go, I've got this Beatles record, it's got to be worth a lot. Yeah. And while there are some Beatles records that are incredibly expensive,
yep,
there's also more Beatles records pressed in the history of vinyl than anything else.
Yes,
so exactly. Many Beatles records are a dime a dozen. And yep, people just automatically assume, well, it's a Beatles, it's got to be worth something. Is it rare? Well, really, there's not so much of a thing as a rare record anymore, only an expensive record, because
– Yeah, that's right.
I mean, with the advent of the internet and thus eBay and Discogs primarily, nothing's really rare anymore.
No, I mean, it's all findable.
Everything is findable. I'm a big advocate for buying on Discogs and eBay, and I've built a lot of my collection, especially my Beatles stuff, right? So
sure.
Being a big Beatles fan, I'm in Canada, as you are as well. I have original Canadian first pressings, many of which were my dad's, but I rounded out the ones I was missing. But I wanted the UK ones because that's really how the albums were intended to be. So the only way I could get those was eBay or Discogs. I'm still missing a couple, but I've got most first pressings of just about all of them. I would not have been able to get them any other way except for eBay and Discogs. And, you know, that opens up a much larger sort of secondary market, a much larger used market. Do you do certainly much? Have you done much eBay or Discog stuff?
You know what? I haven't. I haven't either bought or sold, because there was a time where I had about 2,500 personally to sell, where I was doing the pop-ups. A lot of that was filler. Again, I took all the Nana Muscuri's, all the James Last, all of that stuff always went to Value Village. So there was always, it was always kind of rock and jazz and blues and things like that, but a lot of obscure that maybe one or two people were looking for. But I never really got into that, and I haven't bought much online, but I have never sold. And my theory with the sell part is I just think it would be a pain in the ass.
Sure.
Because what I think, the shape that I think it's in and the shape that you think it's in, there, that's got to be an argument like 9 out of 10 times. But I've got a buddy, and I saw him last night. He was actually over from BC. He showed me, because on Discogs, if you sell, there's a little map and it puts a little pin. It's friggin' covered in these little pins. He's sold a lot. And he said there's been about 2 or 3 out of hundreds that have been a pain in the ass. So yeah. I think it's my perception of it, but I would just imagine it's got to be he said, she said so often. Well, on there.
You bring up an interesting point. It was something that I wanted to get to at some point in our discussion. I mentioned, you know, my growing frustration with how expensive new vinyl is these days.
Yeah.
So I've been going a lot more down the used route in the last, let's say, year, because there's also been some really big holes in my collection that I'd like to fill. In prime example, embarrassingly so, I've ignored Bruce Springsteen for like 30 years. I respected him tremendously, but I was just like, I never got around to listening to it, which, shame on me. I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit that as a, you know, music fan and vinyl guy. I never got into it. And I was recently at a like antique mall, you know, that has a bunch of vendors set up in the same, you know, it's like an old barn or whatever.
Yeah, we've got a few of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a few stalls that have, you know, a few bins of records or whatever. And I was flipping through and Darkness on the Edge of Town. And it was in really great shape, and it was like $10. I'm like, I'm gonna take a gamble on that. And I listened to it and went, whoa, why have I not bothered? You know, so
that's my favorite Springsteen album too, actually. So there you go. That was a great way to get into it. But
so I've dove in, and you know, I've got like almost the first half of his catalog, and I'm in love with it. long way of me saying, getting back to your condition comment a few minutes ago, wife and I like to, you know, take the kid and walk through the antique mall every, you know, on a Sunday every now and then just to get the hell out of the house and, you know, do something. I like to flip through the record bins. And it's funny because I've always looked in used bins, not with as much frequency as I do now, but you see now there's a lot more records showing up in these antique malls and stuff because everyone's like, oh, records are a thing now.
Yeah.
And often it's a lot of garbage, number one.
Sure. But
when it's anybody that's, you know, like a name, Bruce Springsteen, Elvis, the Beatles, you know, Elton John, whatever, people automatically go, damn, I can get $20 for that. And you go, speed up all the hell. You don't even have a plastic sleeve on it. You know, there's a lot of, I've found anyway, that it's easier to find used vinyl for sale, but it's a lot harder to find used vinyl to buy.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. And there is lots out there for sure. And you can hit garage sales and, you know, you get to a certain point that you're just running out of things that you need. And then it becomes things that maybe you want or catch your eye. You start to buy things for the cover, which is cool too. I mean, at the right price, why not?
Sure.
But I am of the camp, and I argue with some of the guys on a Facebook page that I co-run with some other guys on pricing. I would much rather have it at a reasonable price that someone who's going to enjoy that album can take it home and listen to it instead of leaving a $30 sticker on it because I just think it's worth $30 or Discogs says it's worth $30 and sit in the bin in my basement, right? I don't have those bins anymore, but I really always just, you know, yeah, I want to make a little bit because then it just feeds the hobby and it just feeds because, you know, I go and I buy 300 or 400 at a time. But I've really always been of the school of, I know what I paid for it. And a lot of the times it's a buck or two, especially if you're buying 400 or 500, not always.
Right.
But so if I get $5 for something, even if Discogs is selling it for 10, but I get $5 for it, I'm good. Cause then I know that the person that paid me the $5 is happy to get it. But there's guys out there. It's like, well, just put on it. And I get it. I completely understand it. I disagree with it, but well, if somebody's going to pay me $20 for Fleetwood Mac Rumors, I'm going to charge them. Well, and yeah, I get that, but I would much rather, I don't know. I see a lot of younger people that are getting into it, and I don't want them to think that everything is $20 or $30 because those are the people that they run into are the guys selling it for the $20 to $30. I want them to find guys like me where they can start to build a nicer collection for half that price, you know, buy two records instead of just Rumors for $20, buy two Springsteens for $10 a piece or something like that. So in the community here, I think for the most part, everybody is fairly reasonably priced. I think for the most part, but there are certainly guys that will just get every penny that they can out of it. And, you know, I guess more power to them. That's the way the world works. It's just not the way that I work, I guess.
Well, I mean, it sort of comes back to that old adage, right? It's what's better, you know, a bird in the hand or two in the bush, right? Well, maybe sure. I can get 20, but I can definitely get 10. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it really all depends on what your perspective on things is. But I'm kind of I don't sell anything. But if I did, I would rather have that $10 and get on with life and work on selling the next thing than maybe I'll get $20 for it in 2 months time. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I'd rather have, you know, the $10, especially when I paid, even if I paid $5 and I double my money, that's great. Cause it's just going to buy more records, but I would much rather have the person have that record and take it home and listen to it and get some enjoyment out of it because, you know, and maybe it even sounds a little bit better because they know they got a pretty good deal on it. I know that sounds silly, it's always great when you find something for a reasonable price in decent shape, and it just makes you enjoy it that much more. So,
well, and I think there's a differing of perspectives there. You are a guy that is in it for the music, and you want people to enjoy the music. And there are other people, like, it's a business.
It is.
But there's some folks where it's only a business. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying it's right or wrong either way, but you know, no. It's just a different approach. But circling back to the Discogs thing, because you mentioned in your answer a minute ago, you know, Discogs says I can get $20 for this. You know, I think there's a huge misconception in the record collecting community about the role of Discogs. Discogs is not the pricing gospel, right? All no. Discogs is it's a database and it's a marketplace. So the database part of it is fantastic. I use it to catalog my collection. I know every single pressing of every single record I have, and that's great. And I keep a want list and all this other stuff. The other part of Discogs is that it is an online marketplace for record buyers and sellers. And the value is not Discogs saying this is what the record is worth. What Discogs is saying is this record, this pressing has sold X number of times, and the median price of all those sales is this.
Yes.
And people go, well, that's what it's worth. No, that is the average price it has sold for on Discogs.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. You know, I think too many people rely on Discogs as the gospel of what something is worth. Something is worth what someone will pay for it. That's the bottom line. That's
certainly really- that's the thing. And I always air quote it, right? When I get all excited because I found something that, you know, the median says $50, but it's like, and when I explain to my wife, hey, look, it's a $50 record, and she knows, well, yeah, one person paid this and one person paid that, correct, and that's in the middle, right? So the other somewhat dangerous thing, if we're calling it a dangerous thing, Discogs, and I use it, I've got all mine in Discogs, and then I've got all in the of the stores in Discogs as well, because it's just a great tool, because it is nice to and I'm old, so when I go out looking, do I have that already, and I can go and I can look.
But I'm not as old, and I have a smaller collection, and I still go, do I have that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
But this one of the big collections that I just bought for the store was about 2,500 albums. And on almost every album, not everyone, but almost everyone, there was a little sticky note. She went on to Discogs. She took the time, and it was about a six-month process, I'll spit that out, from when we first started talking to when we bought it. Well, I just want to count them all. So she wanted to count them all, but she also went on, and there was a price on every little piece of yellow paper. And most of them were wrong because, for starters, as you know, and as everybody that, or most, maybe not everybody, but most will know, there's a difference. It's the UK press. It's the first press. It's a repress. It's this guy, you know, cut it and things like that. So she was just bringing it up, and probably whatever that first price was, and sometimes it was super low, and sometimes it was like the ridiculous price. You know, it was Ringo's White Album, right? So it was $1 million or whatever.
Right.
So she thought she had, again, she thought she had the world by the tail, because she went in and looked at these, and they were all $10 or $20 albums and things like that. And that's just not the case. Yeah. And there's a really good, there's a good video out there that explains it as well, or it not explains it, and I can't remember who did it. But basically, it's like you look at, because again, for those of us that know, for those that don't, it gives you what your collection is worth. And I keep doing air quotes, right? Because there's the low end. So if your collection is worth everything you've got in it, at the least it's ever sold for, it's this. Anyway, so she saw that, you know, if out of 2,500, she saw that $25,000-$30,000 number and expected me to get close to that. And I just said, you know, a lot of this is not worth what you think it's worth, and showed her and proved it. Like, I wasn't an ass about it. Look, I'll show you really how it works. Okay. But then as well, you would have to sell each one of those individually for that best price or that median price to get anywhere close to that.
Right.
So in the end, we settled on a fairly reasonable, good for me, good for her. She made some money that, you know, on records that were sitting in her basement. I got a pretty good deal, which I'll be able to pass on to people. But a lot of people use it wrong that way, just like eBay, the same thing. They go and they look, and yeah, people are asking ridiculous amounts, but what did it sell for? Which one was it? You know, you understand.
I mean, as you're saying that, I brought up my Discogs summary, and it says that my collection is valued at the most $68,000.
Yeah.
At the minimum, $15,000. And that is a huge range. And
exactly.
Again, in order to get 68, you'd have to find people that want to buy each one of those records at sort of the full pop retail, if you will. And the other thing too about those Discogs values, again, I mentioned if it's sold 100 times in Discogs history, it takes those 100 prices and splits it down the middle, and you know, here's the average selling price of that record. What that average price doesn't take into account as well is condition, right?
No, nope, that's right.
Many of those have sold at good condition. Maybe you've got one that's at, you know, a poor condition. So, you know, it should be used as an approximate guide and an approximate guide only. And far too many people get hung up on Discogs as the gospel price for used records. And it's certainly not. I love it as the marketplace for buying records because – you know, you can find a lot more obscure stuff on there than you can find on eBay.
Sure.
And I find the pricing to be a little bit better on Discogs than on eBay. But, I mean, that's just maybe just been the stuff that I've been looking for. But, I like it as a marketplace, but you know, people get far too hung up on.
They do.
Yeah. The Discogs value is this. Well,
yeah. Good for Discogs. And again, you know, you asked if I'd done much on there, and again, hadn't ever sold anything, and probably should have. Again, for a couple of reasons: A, my buddy says it's not as bad as I think it is, and B, obviously, you open yourself up to the world. The guy looking for the album that nobody locally wants to buy. But the guy in Germany, you know, it's a buddy of his and his buddy made a record and nobody gives a rat's ass here,
right.
But he wants that record. So, you know, it definitely it's a great thing with some dangerous aspects to it.
I think.
Yeah. And you know, eBay is worse, I think. I don't know. I haven't really looked a lot on eBay. So I'm not a good person to speak about eBay because I just haven't looked on it much.
Not a day goes by that I don't sit there and window shop on eBay, you know,
there's
always stuff I'm looking for on eBay. And, you know, I enjoy it. Rarely do I pull the trigger anymore on eBay stuff unless it's, you know, one of a small handful of things I'm looking for. But I have bought a ton of records on eBay in the last 15 years. Absolutely. And I got some the amazing deals are a lot harder to come by now than they were 10 years ago. I mean, I got my Beatles Butcher cover off eBay.
Did you?
I paid less than $200 for it.
Yeah.
You know,
if we could go back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If we could go back. But I mean, I think the vinyl resurgence, the you know, the increased popularity of records and the fact that there's new vinyl being pressed all the time. And, you know, say what you want about the likes of Taylor Swift, but she's brought a lot of people into music and, more importantly, brought a whole generation into vinyl. So
for sure,
all of that is very, very good for the hobby. But I think the side effect of all of that is it's drawn a lot of used vinyl sort of out of the woodwork. And it's both good and bad because there's, you know, stuff that had been sitting in people's basements for 20 years and there's maybe some gems in there, but there's also a whole lot of, you know, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass that, you know.
No, that's right. You can only sell so many whipped cream and other delights because that one will always sell. But really, other than that, maybe the Lonely Bull a little bit. But that's about it for Herb. Yeah, Nana Muscuri is another. Yeah. James Last.
Yeah.
And these people did billions of records. Like Nana Muscuri sold, I think she made 200. And I think she sold you know, a million of each of those 200 records. It just seems like there's that much out there of her stuff when you come across. But and when you buy a collection, for those that might be thinking that it's a thing, you will have to weed out sometimes half of it, a quarter of it usually for sure. So you have to be cognizant of when you start to flip through, oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's a good one. Well, you got to go through them all. And I mean, you know, that's old hat for, you know, a lot of people probably will be watching this. But if you're out there and you're a new collector, you got to make sure you look through them or you don't care, I guess, because you get burned. I'll give you another great example. Even I bought of the 400, one of the 400 collections I bought, they had a little bit of an idea what they were doing, and you know, and I'll be fair with people as much as I can. If I can get a deal, I'll get a deal. Anyway, I'm looking through Odyssey and the Oracle. Looks like an original. Is an original. Pull it out. Looks fantastic. Put it back in. I'm all excited. I buy the collection. I get it home. Pull it out. Looks fantastic. Flip it over. Piece of crap.
Oh, no.
On the other side. Yeah. So, you know, it's still an original Odyssey and the Oracle, and side A is pristine, but it even comes down to, and my buddy and I were talking about this last night, when you're out there and buying these collections, if you're going to do that, pull it all the way out. Because again, I looked at one side. The other side is crap. It's cool. It, you know, it's up on the wall. It looks cool because it's an original, but that's about all it's ever going to be. But even I've had it happen. He's had it happen. You pull it halfway out. Oh, that looks pretty good. But the big scratch is on the other side. If, you know, if you're going to put a little bit of time and money and effort into this, you really have to take your time and you really have to look through them or not care, I guess. I mean, maybe because I'm just as bad as the next guy for excited. Oh man, there's like three or four I want. There's 400 and the rest are probably crap, but I want these three or four, so I'm just going to buy them all. But
I had a former customer of mine, which I would also, you know, consider a friend, I guess, give me a box of records a few months back. Because he knew I was a record guy and someone had given it to him, but he's like, I don't know what to do with these. And he goes, you like records? I go, yeah. He goes, you got the YouTube thing? I go, yeah. He goes, I'm going to give you this box of records. I said, you know how? He goes, no, I want you to have it. I'm like, okay. It was like a milk crate worth of records. Yeah. And I was very grateful that he had done that. I get it home and I look through it. And if there's 50 records in there, I think I kept four. It was a lot of, what am I going to do with this? Like I kept four. I think my wife kept about two. I still have the box and I'm probably going to Goodwill it, I think. And just, you know.
Yeah, Goodwill's got a lot of records from me, but.
Yeah, I might, because, you know, I don't want to throw them out because they may be they're nothing to me, but they may be something to somebody else. But,
sure.
You know, I find that there's a lot. Everybody thinks just because it's a record, it's something, and it often is not. So it's looking through used vinyl is we always talk about the hunt, right? And it's even more so when you're looking through used stuff. You gotta have the patience to look through stuff, and you find something, you gotta check the condition, and you're gonna pass through lots of stuff that you don't want before you find something that you will. So.
Yeah, definitely. That's the way it's going to be. So you just have to take it for what it's worth. There has been a couple of times, but really it's been a couple of times. That's it, where I've bought, you know, say 100 and 90 have been really, really good. But yeah, it's usually the other way around, which is fine. You know, I mean, again, and I've given a lot of the crap, for lack of the proper term, Goodwill, Salvation Army, things like that. But I've also given lots away to people that are starting to get into it because, again, I don't need another copy of Loverboy. I've got a good copy. I've got my original copy, which was crap because I played the hell out of it. I don't need a third copy. And you are listening to this and you want to listen to it, great. And my kids are, one of my daughter's into it a little bit. So she's gotten a lot handed down to her of duplicates and things like that. But it's a great way to do it. I mean, there are lots and lots of new albums and there's lots of older titles. Like I saw they've reissued Laura Branigan, and I guess just because of Gloria, right? Because of the hockey and things. Probably. Like, or maybe not. Maybe she's still popular. I don't know. But I've got three copies of the original used in pristine condition that they listened to a couple of times at the store, but they've reissued it. So it'll be either be the $5 that I want for the original used or the $20 that Walmart even or whoever wants for. So
sure.
There's lots of aspects, but I pulled up just beforehand one that was an example that kind of put this in my head a while ago. A guy for 10 Elvis records, one box set, which has 8 records in it, wants $450. Now, I did the math. I went and I looked it all. At the most, if they're all pristine and you got top dollar for them, Discogs top dollar, it's $90. And he wants $450 because, again, he thinks, oh, my God, I've got Elvis records. Got Elvis. And that's it. But Elvis and the Beatles have sold so many records. The only exception, somewhat exception to that, is you could have 100 copies of Rumors and you would sell 100 copies tomorrow. Yeah, that thing just sells, and it's one of the biggest selling ever, and it's out there, but everybody wants that one still. So that's an exception to the rule. You can still get about $10 for a good conditioned Rumors if you want to. So
yep. Well, we're closing in on the 45-minute mark here, so I thought I'd tie this up with one last question. In all of your used record buying over all of the years, is there one sort of find that sticks in your mind, like, man, did I score on that one?
Well, there's a couple. There's a couple of financial ones. Again, if I was to get the average somewhat price, I bought a Tool record with a bunch of other things that really didn't belong in there. And, you know, so it's a $1,000 record and I paid $100 for everything. So if it's real, it's Enema. I can't remember. I don't remember how they friggin' pronounce it anyway. But it's also got a bunch of bootlegs produced that have been really, really good copies. I'm about 95% sure it's the original. But anyway, so there's that. But there's always been, there's been lots of interesting things in the albums as well, which is kind of cool. So the second part of my answer, so that's the financial one. That's the biggest, I paid this and it's in theory worth that. There's another box set that's like that too. But as far as other cool things inside, there's been, $5 or $10, things like that. There's been lots of letters. There's lots of drawings on, especially on like Duran Duran. I remember that one. I love right. Simon Le Bon, right? And hearts right. and all of that. And that stuff's all. And I love that. The best one I thought though was, I can't remember. I want to say it was a Cheech and Chong record. It probably wasn't, but it was for the best weed call. And then it was a phone number right on the inner sleeve of one.
Nice.
So, there's lots of stuff like that. It's always fun to find things that don't belong. A lot of news clippings too. That comes up quite a bit.
Really?
Where, the album was popular at the time, or even in a couple of the original Beatles that I bought, there was the news clippings from the time.
Oh, cool.
The Fab Four new album, et cetera, et cetera. So that's pretty cool to find. And that all stays with the record. So that's part of it too. Did that answer the question? I know sometimes I go on and on.
That absolutely answers the question. I'll share my fine story and we'll wrap this up. Like I said, I've been collecting since the 90s when I was, 15, 16 in the 90s, buying Beatles records and my friends were listening to, Pearl Jam and Nirvana, right? On CD, right? So I wasn't flowing with the mainstream there, but I remember a good friend of mine, Jeff, in high school. He came to school one Monday and he goes, "Hey man, I was at a garage sale on the weekend and they had a Beatles record there for 50 cents. I bought it. Do you want it?" I'm like, sure. Which one is it? He goes, "I don't know. It's got a whole bunch of people on the front." I'm like, "Oh, Sergeant Pepper." He goes, "Sure." I go, "Yeah, man, I'll take it." So he brought it in the next day. Absolutely pristine, just like flawless. And I go, "What do you want for it?" He goes, "I pay 50 cents. I gave him $5 for it." He goes, "You don't need to do that." I'm like, "Well, I appreciate you thinking of me. I opened it up, and it's the 1976 Canadian pressing on marble vinyl.
Nice.
Which at that point, I didn't even know, because there was no Discogs back then, right? So right. I'm like, I didn't know. I mean, I already had a Sgt. Pepper, but I'm like, I didn't know. And now, you know, again, not to go, it's worth, but, you know, right. You know, that you see people selling that for 50, 75 bucks, you know, and I just love that, you know, a buddy of mine was thoughtful enough to go, hey, man, I found this at a garage sale. Do you want it? And it ended up being something cool, irregardless of what it's worth. I'm like, that's kind of my favorite used find. So
that's good. Yeah. No, that kind of stuff is fantastic. I'm still looking for an In the Wild white album with a serial number. I have four white albums. None of them have serial numbers. So I just keep collecting them, but I haven't found one yet.
I have one.
Because I like to find it in the wild. That's the other thing too, is that I, you know, there's certainly some things that I would like that I don't have yet,
sure.
But I, and, you know, our market is a little limited here, not sure. As big of a population base, but you know, I could go and buy myself a white album, but I'm going to wait till I find one. So hopefully someday.
I'm lucky that I've got an original numbered copy. It's a high number. Like it's a million.
It something. Doesn't matter. I'd take a high number. I'm, you know, if it's I don't need it to be triple digits that.
So on a total side note, it's unrelated to used records, but speaking of numbered white albums, when they did the Giles Martin anniversary remaster edition in what, 2017 or whatever, the CD version was numbered, right? It comes, yep. It's a big hardcover book and it's numbered. And I don't know, they made like 50,000 copies in the world or whatever of the super deluxe CD version. And my numbered copy is 238.
Awesome. That's good.
I'm like, well, I lucked out on that one. So
yeah,
that's awesome. It's not an original 67 vinyl. I mean, I do have 67 vinyl, but you know,
yeah, what it no, is. That's great. So yeah, I think, you know, for those that are listening to this, that are thinking about, hey, is this something that I want to do? Go and buy a bunch of used vinyl. Yeah, it's a blast. It can be, it's a great hobby and it's fantastic. Go and buy new stuff. And that's a big part of it as well. But yeah, if you want to start to get into it, and then you start going to garage sales. I used to make fun of people that went to garage sales, and eventually my wife said, you know, you go to more garage sales than most people these days. But, you know, it becomes a thing. It's almost drug-like a little bit to find a sure. nice batch.
Absolutely.
For sure. So.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Vinyl Community Podcast. Thank you so much, Joe, for joining me. It's always fun to talk to you about records. I always enjoy it.
Always appreciate it, my friend. Anytime you like, you let me know.
Awesome. Well, folks, we'll leave links in the podcast and the YouTube description. Please check out my good friend, Racer Joe, Racer Records on YouTube. As usual, I'm your host, Rob from Northern Revolutions. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Vinyl Community Podcast. Catch you on the flip side.